You're listening to Donuts and Tap Cow.
Two great tastes that taste better together.
Episode 13 of Donuts and Tap Cow. We're going to talk about a 13-issue miniseries. I'll bet you know what miniseries we're talking about.
Artifact.
So we're going to review Artifact 6 today. It's been out for a few weeks, so we believe we've given everybody enough time to grab it, to read it, so we can spoil it. And Lot is really heating up. The teams have been formed. Sarah Pizzini's daughter, Hope, has been kidnapped and is held by who we just know as the antagonist at this point. Who is?
Oh, no. Remember last episode, the survivor.
Oh, that's true. Well, I guess we know from previews that he's called the survivor.
Yeah.
But in any case, they've got Hope. They're trying to align all of the artifacts in one spot so that they can remake the universe and end the universe as we know it. As we left things, Sarah and Aphrodite were in midst of a big confrontation in New York City, while Ian Nottingham, along with Alina Enstrom, Mally, and Sabine, are looking for the 13th artifact, who is on the loose from a monastery in somewhere Tibet-like.
But I just realized something else. The 13th bearer might be the survivor also. I can't keep track of all these guys.
That could be, although he does give himself a name. As we open up issue six, we see just somebody hiding under a bridge or sitting under a bridge, eating out of a cracked bowl some rice, and gets confronted by some street livers.
Did you say crack bowl or cracked bowl?
I said crack de bowl.
Okay.
So, yeah, if you don't have the issue in front of you, you might have just had a different vision and a picture in your mind. But
I was
no,
like, well, I was texting my mom the other night just to totally sidebar this. And I was talking about crockpots, and at one point I typed crackpot. Like, sorry, yeah.
Don't mean that. All right, so this hooded gentleman under the bridge is not lighting up. He is instead just eating rice out of an old bowl that may have been just found along the way. Gets confronted by somebody who claims that being his territory and tries to shake him down to great consequences, where he gets pretty much wiped out. Asks for mercy as he's burning, and the person eating the rice reveals himself to have been that 13th artifact bearer. And the assailant asks for mercy, whatever you are, and he replies, what am I? Unleashed. So he may be the survivor, but for now, he's just unleashed.
Yeah. Well, he's also, and you mentioned his name. My name is G. Assuming that's how J-I is pronounced.
So he has that name, and right about this time, as he brings down his confronters, he gets a new set of confronters, led by Ian Nottingham, who said, well, you haven't been the most easy person to find, but we're glad we got you, because obviously the quest is to get the 13th artifact over to their side. So they move on. And then we move on to our previous scene, and we've got Velocity.
Good old Velocity.
And she's running around. They're still fighting in New York City. The Cyberforce Hunter Killer is still attacking the protagonists at the church, and they're all having their own fights. The Angelus takes Velocity up off the ground to kind of cool her off a little bit, and we continue the fight between the darkness and...
The Darklings and Ripclaw.
Darklings
hilarious.
And Ripclaw is, yeah, it's really great, great scene. As they, the Darklings are just great. Obviously, they've got great commentary. Although, somewhere in the midst of it, there's a call out for wondering where the rest of me is. So you're starting to foretell some of the separation that's starting to take place with the darkness.
Oh, I just figured that was because, Ripclaw just cut a Darkling in half.
Could be the catalyst. But the real gravity of the scene lies with Aphrodite and Sarah. And in classic fight mode, Aphrodite takes the upper hand and Sarah takes the upper hand, and it switches a couple of times as they continue to fight. As Aphrodite's taken down on one time, she defiantly announces that your world is old and sick. I'm bringing about a better world, and strikes off her assailants. And we got some serious action splash pages coming on as we move through this fight scene. I'd say the last half of the book easily is fight scene in New York City.
Everyone that's like, oh, the story's not going anywhere. There's lots of setup.
There's lots of action here.
Here's your big action shots. There's a butt shot.
Which culminates in Aphrodite seemingly defeating everyone who is fighting her and blowing up the place real good as we had heard in a previous issue.
Boom.
And she stands and shows a little hubris. She's a little proud of herself, standing alone, saying, he didn't believe I could accomplish this myself, but I... And then you see the Witchblade pop right through her chest from behind. And Sarah pulls the Coin of Solomon right out of Aphrodite's heart, rips her heart out, as it were.
Sarah's got two artifacts right now.
That cuts over to where Hope's at. Hope's still being babysat and hanging out with the antagonist. And for the first time, the antagonist reveals himself. He notes that Aphrodite IV has served her purpose and been sacrificed. So apparently Aphrodite's failure has been foretold by him. And he's not disappointed at all. It's all going to plan. And he turns around and he goes, Aphrodite's been sacrificed. Now it's Hope's turn. And he reveals his face to be someone who I don't think we recognize.
I do not recognize him. At C2E2, Philip actually said that this person had been revealed this issue, and then in issue 7, we'll find out who he is. Which kind of led me to believe, okay, so we probably weren't supposed to recognize him.
Probably not. So we all had a lot of money on Kenneth Irons. There were a couple irons in the fire, as it were, that we were expecting it to be. And yeah, it still could be. But I thought you had a pretty interesting theory of how the antagonist fits into things.
Which I don't remember, so you're going to have to refresh my memory.
Well, that's cool, because then we get to rehash it. I might have even been in the last episode where you had noted that the antagonist, if it is indeed the survivor, may have been through this combining of the artifacts before in the history
yes.
of time. This may not be the first time that the universe has been remade.
The whole Mayan calendar-y type deal-y I realized all these are coming out in 2012. If he is the survivor, it could have happened before. Possibly, maybe he was one of the other bearers. Survived somehow. And.
So there's a lot to go and not a lot of clues. So I have to give the creative team and I have to give Top Cow a lot of credit for keeping things very interesting and moving along, but also staying so unpredictable. I can't see a whole lot that's been predicted issue to issue, and that's a sign of a really compelling miniseries.
Yeah, and I was really not expecting, I don't know if we've done this recently, it seems like it's been so long since we talked about Artifacts 5, but the killer shot of the issue.
Right, the killer shot. It's hard to pick one.
I was going with Aphrodite 4. I was really not expecting, especially since, I mean, she's on the B cover. It's like, oh, hey, she doesn't have the coin anymore, so I'm assuming it's not going to rebuild her. And even looking at the Portacio cover for issue 7, I mean, it's beheaded, bloodied, green-blooded Aphrodite 4's head being held by Sarah with her body.
With kind of a kinky spinal cord drawn underneath her, which is kind of thought-provoking. The killer moment is... there are a few in this issue, and Aphrodite getting her heart ripped out is a really, really kinetic scene. I think Will Spartacio has really put forth a very cool issue. There are more splash pages than we've had in previous artifacts combined, but they're all really effective to moving this fight story. I guess you can't really have a killer knockdown drag out without having a lot of big art going on.
You know, but looking back, there's one full page shot, there's one almost full page, but a lot of them are, you know, it's surrounded by smaller panels, so it's not like, oh, here's two pages that's one establishing shot of a really big city. I'm not going to talk about what event that happened in. It wasn't Top Cow.
Right.
But in a book that had two more giant splash pages, two of which were, I mean, they were right next to each other, and it was, yeah, it probably made someone a lot of money in original art sales, but as far as telling the story, it was like, oh, that second one's not as effective because we just saw it on the previous page.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, I mean, here it's...
No, I think it's really effective, and it all makes sense. This is a really big issue, and I think you have the one full page of Ripclaw with the Darklings. You've got pretty much a full page of the Angelus pulling up Velocity, even though you've got some smaller panels there. They really take up a page. You have a two-page splash of Aphrodite 4 watching explosions and surveying her success, basically. And the notable thing to me is that the one scene that I would expect to have a full splash page, where Sarah rips her witchblade right through Aphrodite, doesn't get that treatment. Yeah. It gets that treatment in the largeness of the drawing, because there is a large part of that page where it's showing Sarah regarding her, you know, green bleeding claw. But you would think that that would get the splash page, but instead you've got the action panels of the act and of the conclusion. So I think that was really well done.
Yeah. Kind of turning it on its head a little bit.
Yeah,
like
I guess.
Convention.
Yeah, that's it. It's brushing a little against our expectations for the storytelling. So well done. Nice job to the whole creative team. Ron has really kind of cranked up the kinetic energy in this, and it was very well it was very well complemented by Portasio's art. Bonus features in the back. We've got our spread of the Spear of Destiny, written by Ron Mars, and this time the art's by Mukesh Singh and Troy Pateri on the letters. And it's showing the history of the Spear of Destiny leading up to a really great pose shot of Patience as the Magdalena. And Brian Roundtree's contribution is a little less text-centric and a lot more diagram-centric. It's House of Cards, Orbits of Confluence, which is really awesome. It's kind of like an atom symbol, but it's showing the 13 artifacts bearers as well as supporting and ancillary characters, and showing how each one may have been connected to the other, either by association or partnership or whatever it might be. But it just kind of draws the lines between all the players in the artifacts.
This kind of gave me a headache.
It's,
I mean, not in a bad way.
Not like time travel way.
No. But and even looking, the 13th bearer is one of the more interesting ones, because you assume, oh, he's not really going to have had much interaction with many people. But he's pretty close to Patience in the diagram there, and so it's one of those, you know, maybe I'm reading it maybe as some previous Magdalena bearer he had some interaction with.
It's a connection, or...
And, but, I mean, because some of them, you know, it's based off of, it looks like, the distance they are sometimes. Of course, but then I look at Ripclaw's, and Ripclaw's not even close to Jackie Estacado.
Right.
So maybe I'm just talking.
Still kind of on the same line as Jackie
Estacado. Yeah, definitely the same line. It just,
But not a super close relationship. Yeah. So it's more relationship than encounter.
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
Potentially. You may not have as much time with that connected party, but the relationship is closer.
And jumping back real quick, actually, to the origin of the Spear of Destiny, I get the feeling this wasn't supposed to be the original origin in this issue. Because if I flip to the front page with the credits, origin, Coin of Solomon, is listed.
Ooh. little
which would also make sense, you know, possibly too, with Aphrodite 4 on the cover.
Maybe it got too spoilerific. They had to switch it up.
Yes, that could be it. Because, I mean, it's even the same. I mean, it's still Ron, Mukesh, and Troy all listed. Yeah, that was interesting, I thought. I'm like, But yeah, it hadn't occurred to me it might just be spoilerific-y stuff. So they're like, let's justify those.
So the Artifact series continues. We're just big fans of this, and it's just cranking up. I like how it has been changing in pace as it's moved through, but it's done so naturally. And it has been changing energy as they've changed artists. So once Jeremy Hahn comes on, it'll, I'm sure, take another twist. And as we move towards the end, that will be drawn for the 13th issue by some unnamed unknown artist. But we know who that's going to be.
Yeah, I don't see how it couldn't be at this point.
One thing I want to point out is something that I've really enjoyed is on The Barn, which is at Top Cow's website. If you go to www.topcow.com and go over to The Barn, right at the community page, they've got graphics files that you can download. And somebody, and I don't know if this is somebody with Top Cow or it's a fan that's posted them up there, but they made a really great screen, well, kind of like a desktop background of all of the artifacts and their relationship as it was laid out in Artifact Zero. And they took that and laid it out, but then they've also been imposing a page for each of the bearers as well as some other characters. So, and they're using the John Tyler Christopher covers to overlay as the character art that's overlaid on this diagram. It's really worth going over and checking out. I think it's mighty cool.
Well, at least for the artifacts bearers, because I noticed the Cyberforce one is the Dale Keown,
right? That's
artifacts
true.
Cover, but.
So it's worth checking out, and it's kind of a fun community there anyway. The boards are interesting and semi-active, but we'd like to see them become even more active. And I'm endorsing those desktop backgrounds. I'm kind of churning them through as the weeks go. It's been kind of fun to see them on my background.
I have not started being as active as I should be, partially because of that whole moving thing. But that's okay. I'll get there sooner than later.
We'll throw a welcoming party for you when you show up. It's going to be good.
I'm looking forward to that. Oh, you know what we didn't talk about this episode? Donuts.
There's a reason for that.
There is. Those Target Market Pantry apple fritters were so good. We're having them 2 weeks in a row.
How do you like that?
Just,
we had to test it just to see if they could come up and be just as good for the next episode as they were for the first.
Still not Lane's Bakery level, but they're definitely better than everything else, fritter-wise. And I actually had a listener comment about our going over of artifacts and books. It actually made him realize he didn't really need to buy the books because we talk about them so much.
Are we going over too thoroughly?
We might be.
Let me tell you something. We may be talking about story elements, and we may be complimenting the art, but to immerse yourself in it, this is my recommendation for you. If you haven't bought the first issues of Artifacts through the first six Artifacts, and if you haven't bought the trade, though I recommend buying the trade.
It's only $9.99.
Stick on for the full collected. You can follow us for the story, but when a deluxe edition hardcover comes out, you have to immerse yourself in this. The artwork is phenomenal. The storytelling is a clinic, and I really recommend it. And, you know, I guess I gush a lot on this because we're only picking books that we've really liked so far on this show. But I can't stop complimenting how Artifacts is rolling. And, you know, it's given me the excitement and feeling that I've missed from the last few years of crossovers from the big two that I was hoping for. There were a couple events that over the last few years that I was really looking for from them that either fell short or became something that I wasn't looking for. And so far, Artifacts has been what I was looking for in those books.
Which was not 50 different single issues to tell a single event.
Yeah, there's, you could buy some of the others, but they're their own stories. They're not really necessary to the Artifacts story, so I respect that.
The more I look at this Artifacts 6 cover of Aphrodite 4 by John Tyler Christopher, the more I really want one of those Kotobukiya Bishojo statues of this cover.
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
Yeah. And if you guys don't know what I'm talking about, I probably mangled the pronunciation a little bit there. But they've done, like, a bunch of Marvel statues. They look all, as some people say, oh, they look manga-ish, which just really makes me want to kind of punch someone, because manga's really just a Japanese word for comics. So really, since we're speaking English, we could just call them all comics.
It's comic-ish.
But they're gorgeous statues. They've done Marvel. They started doing DC. But this Aphrodite cover, wow. Yeah. Three dimensions. I think it'd be pretty awesome.
It's been really hard not to buy all the covers, because I've really liked most of the covers coming out for each of these issues, and I'm not a variant cover kind of guy. So the one thing I'm kicking myself, I cannot wait for the trade to read the series. Yet, I really want all these covers, so I know I'm going to be ending up buying this in whatever collected format it's going to end up coming out, so I can get all the extras and the whole nine yards.
Not to beat a dead horse or anything, but if we had a deluxe slipcase hardcover oversize of this with all the covers included, I can think of probably two people that would buy one already.
Oh, and we'll get a lot more people to buy them, too. So I'm ready to put in my pre-order. I know that for sure. So let's talk some future episodes. We've got some interesting stuff coming up in the next few weeks. We're going to take a little dip into the past. One of the things, so I'm just giving you a little information so you can kind of search for it yourself in whatever market you can find. We're going to talk about an interesting company crossover between Top Cow and Marvel Comics with the Magdalena Daredevil crossover written by Phil Hester.
And drawn by Phil Hester. And if you're going to a convention sometime soon, check those dollar boxes. I was at C2E2, and I easily found four of them. And so really, there's no excuse not to get a copy of it.
So grab a copy, join us along. If you get a copy, if you have a copy, read it and send us some thoughts. You can send your thoughts to dtcpodcast@gmail.com. And you can let us know your thoughts, and we'll read them on the show. We'll share them. You can send an audio file. We'll play it on the show. You can also follow us or talk to us on Twitter. It's @JoshCrawley, JoshCrawley, or @JGMadisonW. And we will interact. We'd look forward to hearing from you. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Westfield Comics, located in Madison, Wisconsin, with two retail stores. Or online at www.westfieldcomics.com. Get your subscription service started, buy some books at discount, and if you email them, I'll bet they can find a copy of this Magdalena Daredevil unless they sell out before this time.
Which is possible.
It certainly is. So give them a call. Again, we want to thank Derek Coward and the Comic Book Noise family of podcasts for taking us in and hosting us. We're proud to be a part of this quality feed of comic and pop culture podcasts. So we encourage you to check them out at www.comicbooknoise and www.comicbooknoisefamily.com. Our particular website is at comicbooknoise.com/topcow. So we look forward to hearing from you, and we look forward to talking to you again in the coming weeks. Have a great week.
Good journey.
Around without a whole lot to do.